From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Mountain View.
San Rafael.
Lower Haight, San Francisco.
Brentwood.
Corte Madera.
Pleasant Hill.
Inner Richmond in San Francisco.
Montclair in Oakland.
Tiburon.
Sausalito.
Japantown, San Francisco.
Berkeley, California.
Coming up, how San Francisco is managing its booming food truck scene.
Anytime you have really passionate people operating in the same space, there's potential for issues to happen.
Then how the grape harvest in Napa leaves a lasting impression on field workers.
Their hands are all shadowed with the color, you know, we call it the purple pride.
And we take another look at how immigrants experience the Bay Area.
I wanted to get into a residency program, but it's been a little tougher than I thought it would be.
The unexpected consequences of career choices. That's today on Cross Currents. Over the past couple of weeks, fast food restaurant workers have been striking around the country. The workers are asking for a pay increase to $15 an hour and the right to organize as a union. Jason Hughes was at a recent demonstration at the Oakland Coliseum BART station.
I work at a Fremont McDonald's. I'm here today to support $15 in a union because honestly, we can't even survive on any of these. Me and my roommate, you know, we met at the job site and we're supporting each other. Whoever makes the most money out of the next check, I want to save up for culinary school. I'm not able to do that right now.
38-year-old Shonda Roberts was also at the protest. She works at a KFC in Oakland.
Right now, I make $8 an hour. I see about 16 hours a week. That's not enough to pay rent, put food on your table, pay for education and health care. 9 times out of 10, I go to work hungry because I can't afford to put food on my table.
KALW contacted several fast food chains for their responses to the protests. McDonald's USA released an official response stating that the parent company does not determine the wages set by its roughly 3,000 franchises. The statement reads in part, quote, "We respect our employees' rights to voice their opinions. Employees who participated in these activities and returned to work were welcomed back and scheduled to work their regular shifts as usual," unquote. Other fast food retailers we contacted didn't immediately respond to our inquiries. Locally, restaurants are involved in a different fight, this one with food trucks. In San Francisco, the street food scene exploded after the recession, and there are now food trucks with every food imaginable. They even have their own marketplaces, like Off the Grid, that serves more than 15,000 meals a week in the Bay Area. But some brick-and-mortar shops feel the trucks are stealing business from them, and now they're fighting back for their piece of the foodie pie. These restaurant owners say it's unfair for them to pay for their primo real estate while a food truck can just park in front of their business. In an effort to calm the waters between the two sides, San Francisco's Board of Supervisors passed legislation governing new food trucks, specifying when and where trucks can do business. The law has been in effect for just about a month and a half, and it's still unclear whether food trucks and brick-and-mortar restaurants have called a truce. KALW's Tiffany Kamhai talked to a few food truck owners at lunchtime to see what they think of the new rules and regulations.
I got a hella vegan, one side samosa.
You can tell when it's lunchtime in the financial district. On the corner of Bush and Battery Streets, you'll see a long line of people at a bright orange and pink food truck.
Thank you. We hurry up at Curry Up.
Curry Up now is still at the same spot where they first got their permit to serve food back in 2010. On the menu are various authentic Indian dishes served in a familiar form. Basically, Indian-style burritos.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good. Can I get a jalapeño with no shaved onions in it?
What about pico de gallo?
That's fine.
All right, give me a hella vegan, please. No extra onions.
The combination of convenience, quick service, and diverse foods is what brings customers to food trucks like this one. Desiree Mingoa works nearby. She says she orders from Curry Up Now almost every week.
It's convenient. It's around the corner from my job, so I don't have to go to no restaurant or anything. I mean, food trucks are awesome.
So we started off in September of 2009 as a little food truck, kind of just a random idea.
This is Amir Hosseini. He started the food truck with Akash and Rana Kapoor. Hosseini says Curry Up Now got into the street food scene in 2009 when food trucks were everywhere. It was just after the financial crisis.
And after, you know, a few months, we realized that we kind of had something here, and we really pushed forward on it and kind of turned it into a full-time business.
Since then, Curry Up Now has become one of the most popular food trucks in the street food scene. That's why Hosseini and his partner Akash made sure to participate in the drafting of a new food truck law. And Hosseini says it was a compromise for both restaurants and food trucks.
I'd like to think that we have a kind of a healthy balance of what works and doesn't work. Brick and mortars, restaurants, it's kind of set in stone. You know what you need to do. You know what those guidelines are, what you can and can't serve, you know. And with food trucks, for a while, I think that it wasn't so clear-cut on a mass kind of, emphasis.
The new legislation requires food trucks to stay at least 75 feet away from brick-and-mortar restaurants. Before, food trucks could operate near any restaurant, as long as the food being served was different.
But you have to get vegetable pad thai if you want it gluten-free, because the chicken has a little bit of soy sauce.
You know, I think time will tell exactly how it works out.
Matt Cohen is the founder of Off the Grid, the Bay Area's largest food truck marketplace. Cohen is also street food's biggest defender. He's been working on the new legislation for 2 years. Cohen says changes to the law were needed because it wasn't clear enough for food truck operators. Many didn't know what was and wasn't legal when it came to serving food on public property. Cohen also says he wanted the law to recognize that food trucks are an important part of the food industry.
Street food businesses are a part of the neighborhood that they serve, and hopefully they're adding something, a vibrancy and a sense of like on-street activity to a space. They're not just simply poaching customers from the side of the street.
The new legislation is also designed to lower the bar for those looking to get into the business. Permit costs have been as high as $10,000 without a guarantee of being approved. The new legislation would lower the permit fees and also expedite the process. It's something food truck owner Casey Crimes would have appreciated when he was applying for a permit.
The whole permitting process for me start to finish, it took 8 months from the time I submitted the application and then went through the hearing process, because there were a few objections. You know, obviously there were restaurants nearby that weren't really too thrilled that I was going to be around.
Crimes owns Casey's Pizza, a food truck that has been serving East Coast-style pies in the financial district since 2011. When it comes to relationships with brick-and-mortar restaurants, Crime says many of the objections stem from misunderstandings. Many restaurants are open for 8 hours or more, while food trucks usually operate for 2 or 3 hours a day. Crimes also says a lot of brick-and-mortar restaurant owners don't realize that food trucks have the same kind of expenses as them.
I mean, it's all relative. You know, we're making X dollars and they're making Z. So we pay sales tax, we pay workers' comp, we pay federal tax. We're the same kind of legitimate food business as them.
Many organizations were at the table during the drafting of this new law. The Golden Gate Restaurant Association represented both the interests of restaurants and food trucks. Rob Black is the association's executive director.
There's not a lot of places where the city and county allows private business owners to operate on public land for profit. And so the city's tried to come up with a way to regulate that in a way that works for everyone.
San Francisco's food truck laws have been around since the 1970s, when pretzel and hot dog carts were popular. But the law has changed very little since then. Black says this new law is an attempt to catch up with the city's evolving food scene. But he says it's hard to tell if it will work for everyone right away.
It's never going to be perfect for everyone, but it can be a place where we're promoting and fostering the innovation that the food truck community brings to our culinary scene here in San Francisco, at the same time ensuring that it's a fair competition where somebody doesn't get to use the public right of way to unfairly compete with someone else.
The funny thing is, operating a food truck is kind of like operating a restaurant, just on a very smaller scale.
Curry Up Now's Amir Hosseini knows that firsthand, because in 2011, Curry Up Now was doing well enough to open a restaurant in San Mateo. Earlier this year, the company opened up its third restaurant in San Francisco's Mission District. Hosseini says that they haven't had any problems with their food truck brothers so far. In fact, Hosseini says the San Mateo location welcomes other food trucks.
You know, it brings people to the area, and so I think we're totally okay with that. I mean, the food is what, for us, is important.
And in the end, delicious food is all it boils down to for Bay Area foodies. In San Francisco, I'm Tiffany Kamhai for Cross Currents.
What rules of the road would you write for food trucks? You can let us know on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And we're especially interested in hearing from restaurant owners out there. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. At its heart, California's food economy is all about agriculture. Our state produces almost half of the fruits and vegetables consumed in the United States. In the Bay Area, one of our biggest crops is grapes. And right now, it's harvest time. It started on August 1st and could run through late fall. Tourists who visit wine country might imagine seeing people with bare feet squishing grapes between their toes. That's part of harvest, but there's another part that happens not with toes, but with fingers and tractors, and not in daylight, but under floodlights that burn through the night. KALW's Julie Kane takes us into the vines in Napa County in this archive story from the 2012 grape harvest.
It's 10 p.m. at a gas station near St. Helena. Even though the entire valley is filled with activity, this gas station is the only thing open for miles.
Whopping 727.
Ooh. We're at the Fires gas station here. The St. Helena Highway. It's also the Highway 29. And it's also Main Street St. Helena. This is where I tell people dogs are traded and dates are made.
So where are you going tonight?
I'm at work.
Are they crushing tonight?
No, we're done.
Tonight is the last night of the 2012 grape harvest. The work's been going nonstop, 24 hours a day, for weeks.
Workers come from out of the county. They come all the way from Modesto, Lodi. They get picked up in the early morning. They start at 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning. They're not done until 6, 7. They work around the clock this time of year. But in the middle of the night, you know, it's crazy because they have the vineyards all lit up and you can hear them just through the grapes, you know, you can hear them. And their hands are all shadowed with the color, you know, we call it the purple pride. You can be proud when your hands are stained that color, you know, knowing that you treated, you know, that you were in touch.
All right, so you're on duty.
Yep.
Stay warm. Stay well.
The gas station is surrounded by the harvest. Field workers and tractors move through the fields right across the highway, and big trucks rumble past, hauling freshly picked grapes to be processed first thing in the morning. About 10 miles from the gas station is the Paradox Vineyard. It's owned by a company called Duckhorn. In a field outside the winery, six men in orange safety vests and heavy work boots are doing squats, stretching out their muscles before a long night of grueling physical labor. These guys are getting ready to work hard. They're trying to pick the last grapes of the season before a storm comes. The skies are clear right now, but heavy rain is in the forecast.
Mi nombre es Fermín Hurtado, de México, de Michoacán.
Fermín Hurtado is the foreman tonight.
I worked for Duckhorn for about 20 years.
He's paying attention to everything, watching the sky for rain and making sure the work goes as planned. The harvest, or la cosecha, is his very favorite part of the job. He says that's because this is when they get to see the fruits of all the work they've done the whole year. Tonight, he's excited, but he's also worried. If the fields get too wet, the tractors that haul the grapes to the winery will get stuck in the mud between the vines, and the harvest will come to a stop. He says the rain's coming at 3 or 4 in the morning, but we'll see. Jorge Flores is sharpening a small curved knife that he'll use to cut Cabernet grapes by hand until sunrise, or until it starts raining. He's been cutting grapes for 5 years. He slices them from the vines by hand and then drops them into a gray plastic bin with the number 3 stenciled on the side. They get paid by the bin, or bandeja.
¿Cómo se llama?
Bandeja.
Bandeja.
Each one holds about 40 pounds of grapes. The faster you pick, the more bins you fill, and the more money you make. But even though speed is important,
el cuchillo es algo peligroso. Si no tiene uno cuidado, se puede cortar.
The knives can be dangerous if you're not careful, and your attention is divided, watching the blade and inspecting the fruit while you cut. Not all the grapes are high enough quality for the vineyard to use.
Esta no la quieren, esta no es calidad. Esta es la fruta buena que la que quiere la la compañía.
Out in the field, the men move quickly, hunched over at the waist, pushing aside leaves to get at the ripe fruit and kicking their bins along the ground as they move from vine to vine. As soon as they're full, the men hoist them under their shoulders and run as fast as they can to a waiting tractor, where they toss their grapes into a crate the size of a pickup truck bed. Then they shout their number stenciled on the side of their bin to the foreman, and he jots it down on a clipboard. This is how they'll get paid. The work is fast and relentless and physically demanding. That's why the stretches and squats are so important before they start. Being in good shape is the only way to make a living at this. But even so, the work eventually takes a toll.
Al principio entramos con ganas, ya después de medianoche ya se cansa el cuerpo ya.
We start out with a lot of energy, Jorge says, but after midnight, our bodies start to get tired. But just because the body gets tired doesn't mean the work is done. These men will keep picking tonight until the very last grape is stripped from these vines, or until it starts raining.
Ayúdenme, chava, para que no se vayan a quedar.
That story is part of Audiograph, our project documenting the Bay Area's signature sounds and the stories behind them. You can find more Audiograph stories at kalw.org. And you heard that through the grapevine. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Agriculture is arguably one of the most visible parts of our state's economy that relies on an immigrant workforce. But many of us have come here from somewhere else. In fact, California has more immigrants than any other state in the country. This week, we're running a series of profiles of immigrants in the Bay Area. Today, we meet a medical professional from India and a young woman from Ireland.
My name is Mahadevan G.R. I'm from Tamil Nadu, India. I live in San Francisco. Well, I got my medical diploma back in 2007, and I practiced for a couple of years. Then I moved out here. I wanted to get into a residency program, but it's been a little tougher than I thought it would be. So I've been doing odd jobs. You know, I've worked at a blood bank. I've also worked at a pathology lab, you know, taking tissue samples and things like that. Right now, I'm a cab driver. I drive with community ride-sharing program called Lyft. You know, you have your own car, and you have download the app on your phone, and people request rides from point A to point B, and if you're free to drive them around, that's what you do, and they'll give you a small donation for it. I really like my job, and you know, it makes me explore San Francisco. This is just a temporary position for me, and as soon as I get my act together and my finances in order, I will probably pursue other options. It's expensive to, you know, take the exams and apply. The whole process is expensive. We're easily looking at $10,000 to $15,000. It's a highly competitive exam, and passing the board is not a problem. You just have to get high scores. As a foreign medical graduate, you're competing against medical graduates from all around the world, and the higher score you get, the better your chances are of matching into residency. So I have a green card, so I have no problem, you know, living in this country. My uncle, my dad's father, he got it first, and he moved here, and he lives in Concord now. And then he sponsored the rest of the family. So my dad got his green card from my uncle, and, you know, so that's how it, and I got the green card from my dad. Well, I feel I belong in both places. I feel Indian and I feel American at the same time. It's a beautiful feeling. I feel like I'm a citizen of the world.
My name is Leslie Spillan, and I'm living in Oakland, and I'm from Ireland. I came over, well, I left home in September, but I've been living in the Bay Area since January. I decided originally to go to San Diego because I've got an uncle who lives there, and I thought it would be nice to live somewhere that you could go to the beach every day and the weather would be nice. But when I got to San Diego, I couldn't get in touch with my uncle for the first kind of week or 2 weeks I was there, and I just wasn't really liking the place very much, and I wasn't finding a job. And I met some Australian girls who were going to San Francisco, and they wanted me to come with them, so I did. And then after they left, I started working in the hostel that I was staying at. I mean, I was working two jobs, so I was working like 64 hours a week, and it just wasn't something I could keep doing for more than a couple of weeks, besides being absolutely exhausting. You know, living in a hostel is not fun. It is very different when you're trying to live somewhere and you're trying to like set up a life than it is when you're a tourist and you're just visiting and you're going home again. Finding a job was hard because, you know, I have no idea how to write a resume. Like, it's different than at home, or where to look for a job, what websites to look at, where to go for a job. And I have no idea about what to do if I don't have a job, if I don't find a job, if I run out of money, like what resources are available or who to turn to for help. You know, at home I would know, you know, where to go or who to ask, but here I didn't have a clue. American officials in the embassy are pretty scary, and even just going through all the paperwork, trying to get a passport and filling out forms and traveling up to Dublin to get, you know, to apply for the right visas, and then applying for, you know, filling out the right paperwork, and then I didn't fill out the right paperwork and I had to go away and come back, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff was still, you know, you still have to pay for it and you still have to go up and make an appointment and submit all this paperwork. So it wasn't, you know, completely easy. You know, I don't have a credit score and I don't have references, and, you know, I can't sign a year-long lease because I don't know how long I'm going to be here for. So I think finding an apartment was harder than finding a job.
Those were the voices of Mahade Wanjiar and Leslie Spillan. KALW's Eva Sonsin produced those pieces as part of a series of profiles we're airing this week on Cross Currents. That's it for today's Cross Currents. The team includes David Boyer, Jeremy Dalmas, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Alyssa Kapnick, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Daniel Moore, Liz Pfeffer, Stephen Short, and Mary Willis. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio.
And speaking of our listeners, we'd really like your input for a show we have coming up about dogs. It's said that they outnumber kids in San Francisco. So this has us wondering, what effect can so many dogs have on our city? Tell us how you think dog ownership is changing San Francisco. Just leave us a message on our tip line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And stay tuned for our upcoming
dog show. Little dogs, bossy dogs,
bossy dogs, and quiet dogs.
Dog show.
This is the Dirty Cello Band. Their music mixes soulful blues with gypsy swing. Dirty Cello will be playing at the Oakland location of District Restaurant this Thursday. Starts around 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.